Hello, 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 everyone, and welcome to Cheers to Leaving. My name is Rachel, and I have my best mate, Molly, with me. Say hello, Molly.
Hello, mate.
Hello. How are you feeling this fine evening?
I'm great. I got a massage today, so I'm in wonderful spirits.
I'm so jealous.
It was so wonderful. She's like very energetic healer, too, so she did all this energy stuff on me. And then at the end of the session, she was like, do you want to hear about like what came through for me while I was working on you? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, well, one of your spirit guides is a panda. And that made my day. So.
Well, one of your spirit guides is a panda. And you're like, she's like, yes.
She's like, me and this panda came, we put rods of protection down your spine. And it was like really interesting. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. I love that. Okay. Thank you.
Well.
Yeah. But I'm feeling great.
I bet you are.
It was wonderful.
That sounds like a great thing to happen.
Yeah. And we're friends outside of, cause you know, we're both body workers. So we're like friends outside of the workspace. And so we went and got fried chicken afterwards.
Okay. Well, you just had my dream day.
So. I know. I'm living my best life. I'm sorry. I should have invited you.
You should have. I would have drove 8 hours. Just kidding. I wouldn't have. Okay. Anyway, enough about pandas. Today we have a special guest. Her name is Marla Daviano. Marla is into books. She's into love. Justice, globes, anti-racism, blue, gray, rainbows, and poems. She reads and writes for a living, and she wears her heart on t-shirts and is on a mission / quest / journey to live whole-farted. That is not a typo. She is the author of Unbelieve, Poems on the Journey to Becoming a Heretic, and Jaded, A Poetic Reckoning with White Evangelical Christian Indoctrination. She lives in South Carolina with her 4 freaking awesome kids. And some of you may not know this about me, but I love a good poetry book. And what makes Marla's poetry book exceptional is that it's all about leaving evangelicalism. So we haven't read Unbelievable, but we hear it's incredible. And I also heard it's a slightly watered down version than Jaded. So we just skipped step 1 and went right to step 2. And I'm not mad about it.
It was so worth it. It was the best. Yeah.
We just went straight to the good, I guess. I think a lot of us are going to relate so hard to this book. There were some verses that I read and I was like, damn, she nailed it.
So, I read some of it out loud to my dog because I was like, dog, you need to hear.
Like, oh my God, dog, listen to this.
No, I needed to like vocalize what I was reading because I was like, this is exactly how I feel. And someone put words to it. And I love this.
Yes. Yeah. And in poetry and verse and all of that. So if you're looking for a good book and bonus, if you love poetry to help you grieve, acknowledge what you went through, this is probably the book for you. So with that, I want to welcome Marla to the podcast. Welcome, Marla.
Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you for all of that.
You're welcome. Psyched.
Marla, we are just so, so excited to have you here, as you can tell. And because our listeners don't know you, they don't know who you are. And could you just give us your background? Tell us who you are. You have a fascinating background story, and I think it really plays deeply into your written work now. So if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, tell us your story. How did you get to where you are now?
For sure. I will tell a kind of an abbreviated version. And then if something interests you and you want to talk about that specifically more, because a lot has happened to me in 47 years of life. So I grew up as the oldest of 4 kids in a very conservative Christian family. I never know how conservative to say it was because it was just all that I knew. I thought it was just a Christian family. I didn't know about the word conservative or even white conservative or white conservative evangelical. Those are all things that I came to learn about later. So I don't think I grew up in a cult. I was allowed to do a lot of things. I went to public school. But the town that I grew up in, from sixth grade on is a very small, very white town in the middle of a cornfield in Ohio. And I went from there to a Christian college. Then I went to a Christian church camp where I worked as a counselor and met the man, young man at the time, that I went on to marry. We got married. We had three kids in 2000, 2002, and 2006. And from there, we did a whole bunch of ministry-related things, which culminated in going to Cambodia in 2015 as quote-unquote missionaries. Before that, we had visited and we'd gone on a missions trip in 2010, my now ex-husband and I. And then in 2011, we decided to go as a family. We're going to take our three girls with us to Cambodia. So we saved up money, all of that. And then my husband had a heart attack at the age of 34 and almost died 5 weeks before, 6 weeks before we went on that trip. But then he got clearance from the doctor. So we went, spent 5 weeks at the end of 2011, beginning of 2012 in Cambodia with plans to come back, get out of the rest of our debt, and then move to Cambodia. But it turned out that he started having panic attacks and anxiety for the next 3 years, kind of as post-traumatic stress after his heart attack. So instead of moving to Cambodia, we just racked up a whole bunch of hospital debt and lost our house. He lost his job. And in 2014, we moved into an apartment complex that was primarily Somali refugees in Ohio. Lived there for a year before we moved to Cambodia for 5 years. I started quote unquote deconstructing my faith around 2009, 10. And then while we were in Cambodia, supposedly missionaries, I pretty much gave up on it altogether. The last time I've been to church is May of 2017. So it's been like 6 years now. And fast forward to moving back, we moved back to the States in March of 2020 on the last plane out of Siem Reap, Cambodia. They kept getting, all our flights kept getting canceled and messed up. We didn't know if we would make it out. And we did. We left our daughter and her Cambodian fiance in Cambodia because the embassy was closed down because of COVID. So we didn't know if or when they would ever get to come join us. But in June of 2020, they did. And then in September of 2020, on Labor Day, actually, my husband came back from visiting his family in Ohio and said, I want a divorce. And he left. And I have not seen him since. And his kids have not seen him since. So in this house in South Carolina, I'm from Ohio. We moved back to South Carolina to start over in a new place. My sister lives here. A lot of people in Ohio. I have another sister who disowned me who lives in Ohio. My parents, just all of that. It felt like a new place to start over. Did not know that I would be a single mom. And here I am now with all three of my daughters live with me. They are 22, 20, and 17. And my oldest is married and my son-in-law lives here too. And I am a writer and a poet. And that's not my day job because I don't make enough money yet doing that to pay all the bills. But I am a writer for a living as well, a writer and an editor. So I write for other people, loan officers, entrepreneurs, people who want to write a book but don't know how. I ghostwrite books for them. And yeah, that's where I'm at.
Holy moly, that is a story. Okay, we're going to have to like backtrack a little bit. Because I am very curious. Yeah. Okay. So you said you started deconstructing your faith while you were on the mission field in Cambodia.
Yeah, actually before that. But I didn't know that it was deconstructing. I thought I was just learning some new things. What it really was around 2009 and 10, we helped a Black pastor friend plant a multi-ethnic church in our city. And that was me waking up to racism and white supremacy. And at first I wasn't even, I was like, oh, let's just all get together, all happy. We're all different colors and we'll have a fun church experience. And then it really happened for me in 2012 when Trayvon Martin was killed. And one of my new friends from church who is Black said on Facebook, why aren't any of my white friends talking about Trayvon Martin? I didn't know what she was talking about. I had no clue. I Googled it. And then that just led down this rabbit trail of, oh my God, there's all this stuff that has been happening. Police brutality, mass incarceration, learning the real truth of history. And so that, I thought I was just on an anti-racism journey. I didn't think that that would lead to my whole entire belief system coming undone. But that is what happened. So it was like they warn you, a slippery slope, the dominoes falling. It was really like that. I was deconstructing and doing a lot of things before Donald Trump was elected. I know that was kind of the catalyst for some people. Some people, it was the 2020 murder of George Floyd or the election again. But yeah, while I was in Cambodia, we had a lot of things go wrong there. We started realizing that people in church situations were spiritually abusive, and I became LGBTQ plus affirming in that time. And it just all started to feel like I don't fit here in church. And all the people who are going to church and who are Christians seem to be on the opposite side, including people in my family, are on the opposite side of all of these issues that have become really, really important to me and that aren't issues anymore to me. They are actual people that I love and that are being harmed by people in the church. And so it started to feel like I've got to pick a side. I'm trying to stay on the church side when the church is causing all of this harm. And I don't want to do that anymore. So like I said, we stopped going to church in 2017. Haven't been back. It was a slow journey to where I'm at now. I have a poem in Unbelief called Where Have I Landed? Because people are always asking me that. So where have you landed as far as your faith goes? I haven't landed anywhere. And I love that I haven't landed anywhere. If I have to pick a label, I'd probably say agnostic because I don't know. I'm super comfortable with not knowing. I'm not in any rush to try to know. And I don't think it's really possible anymore to know all of the things that I was so certain about for so many decades. I no longer feel certain or feel like that's even the goal. And so it's really freeing. That's kind of my big thing that I want to tell people. Listen, it's hard depending on where you're coming from and who your friends are and what you go through. It can be really, really, really tough. But on the other side of that is a whole lot of freedom and healing and wholeness. And you get to be who you really are. You get to find out who you really are. Like for me, I'm in my 40s and trying to figure out who the hell am I when I wasn't allowed to be who I was this whole time. And my queer friends are showing me the way on that one because they were definitely not allowed to be who they were. And a lot of them like are just now figuring that out as well later in life.
I feel like agnostic is the way a lot of us go because we had to be so certain of things for so long, or we were told things for so long. And I think it's kind of fun after you get past the scary part to just kind of sit in the unknown and think about all the possibilities that there are and just kind of explore them. Like, I think it's kind of fun once you get past the existential crisis that is on the other side. You know, you have to come to grasp with the absurdity of reality for a bit, with death, with there's no afterlife, you know, at least the afterlife we were told about. But then you get to be like, but think of all the possibilities that are out there that I get to explore now, and I don't have to pick one, you know? So,
yeah, that's exactly how I feel. And when I wrote Unbelief, so you were saying how, I forget what you said about Unbelief. I called Jaded, the bitchy little sister.
Somewhere. Yeah, I think I read that. I don't know if it was a review or if it's you, but you were like, hey, if you haven't read Unbelieve, this one might be a lot. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, so right. It was kind of like, like the soft opening, I believe, was that I do tell a lot of my story in there. So my plan was that I would write Unbelieve, I'd tell my story, and then all that possibility and all that great stuff you're talking about, that was going to be the second book. Like, look what's on the other side. Look at all this. And I sat down to write that book next, and all of this bitterness and anger and rage was just, and there's some of that in Unbelieve, not a ton, but it just started bubbling over. And I thought, okay, there's a middle book here. I've got to get this out of my system. And it's not all the way out. I don't spend my days in anger necessarily. I do have a lot of anger on behalf of other people who are being harmed for the most part. There's not a lot of harm still being done to me now that I'm out of the church. But so that's what Jaded is it's that reckoning, that anger. And then I am working on a third book now that I'm trying really hard to make it be all of that possibility. And that won't be an ending either, because I'm on a journey that's going to last for as long as I'm alive. And mm-hmm. it's really, really exciting.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think what's so resonating with Jaded is that we all go through our angry stages, like, and it comes in waves, I feel like, because sometimes I get really freaking pissed off, you know, at all of it. And then I'm like, oh, but this is so cool. And like, look at all that I'm learning. And then I'm like, oh, but look at all that I missed out on. Or like, look at all these, you know, things people are doing right now. They're so freaking stupid. I can't believe they don't see what they're doing. And so I think it's really important. And there was definitely a few, like I said, poems that just really like hit home with me. And I was like, yeah, I think a lot of people are going to read this and be like, yeah, yeah, exactly. That is exactly how I feel. So it's good to process the anger.
Yeah, I get that a lot. I love every single message or email that I get from people who read it. And when they say that, like, this is exactly how I feel. And obviously, no one's going to read the book and feel exactly the way I do with every single page, but enough of it, I think, is universal that you can at least see your experience in it. Like, I've had people rewrite the poems on the page and just put their own little details in, changing the story a little bit. Like in Unbelieve, I don't mention in Unbelieve that it's my sister who disowned me, but I talk about her a lot as someone who disowned me. And so I've had people write in like who the person in their family that disowned them or what happened to them. And yeah, it's tough. I compare it. I didn't know when I was writing it that I was going to also be divorced. And so I compare my ex with evangelical Christianity. Like, they both wanted me to be quieter, smaller, less than who I really was. And I'm better and more me on the other side of both of them. However, it was hell getting to that other side, both with leaving Christianity and with being left and getting divorced. And my husband cheated on me. I didn't find that out until 4 months after he left that he'd been cheating for 4 of the 5 years that we lived in Cambodia, which just turned that whole thing upside down for me. So there's been a lot of healing happening all at once. And writing has always been a way that I process and heal. And so I'm just really thankful that I can heal through it. And then other people can read it and find healing too, which then brings me even more healing to feel like the things that I went through, it wasn't in vain. I no longer believe that all things work together for good to them that love God and all of that. But I do believe that we can use a lot of the bad stuff that happens to us to then heal and grow and to help other people too.
Hey, we know that deconstructing religious trauma is hard and can feel heavy when you're doing it on your own. We get it. We're right here with you in this process. The one thing we can always go back to is getting quality therapy with a licensed mental health professional. Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest leading therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 25,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy.
That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call. You can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom picked for you. You'll have more scheduling flexibility at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/cheers. That's better, HELP.com/cheers. So would you say that your husband leaving you kind of jump started you into this journey of writing Unbelief and Jaded? I got a little confused on the timeline. I know you were in Cambodia from 2015 to 2020.
Yeah.
And yes. Shortly after that, he was like, I'm out. And then what, like, because you obviously had, not obviously, I don't want to assume. Did you have intentions of looking at the possibility of leaving him at all or leaving evangelicalism at that point? Or were you just still kind of confused about what was going on with you? And then he just made it easy.
I never for one second was ever going to leave my husband. I, even as I started deconstructing my faith, I was still very firmly in the camp of, we made this commitment and we're going to stay married. It was hard. He was a shitty husband for a long time. And in his defense, if I'm going to say one thing in his defense, after his heart attack, that changed him. He had a lot of anxiety, like I talked about, anxiety, panic attacks. Mentally, he was a different person. I think that he was in many instances living kind of in a different reality. And it was just really tough. So there were times when our marriage felt like it was pretty good. And other times I'm like, I don't know who you are. I don't know why you're being so cruel. I don't understand this. How am I going to do this? So my writing journey actually goes back a lot farther. I have published books from in 2006, 7, 8, and 9. I was a conservative evangelical author and speaker. So I have a book called From Blushing Bride to Wedded Wife, a book called Is That All He Thinks About? How to Enjoy Great Sex with Your Husband. I have them here. I can show you these. Yeah, do not buy these books.
I want to buy them.
Okay, fine.
Okay, I new subject. Subject change.
We should change the subject.
From Blushing Bride to Wedded Wife. Yep.
Okay, I need to know about that first book.
I'm looking it up now.
The sex one or
The Blushing Bride to Wedded Wife. Like, can you please tell me the premise of this book and what... I get it, like, I'm just so curious about this. Was it like a, you know, almost like an I Kissed Dating Goodbye type of book, like a Josh Harris breakthrough, like book, like you were thinking you were going to be the next like purity culture leader.
Okay. Well, holy here's the shit, thing. I don't know Amazon. When Joshua Harris wrote his book. I didn't read it.
In the 90s. Yeah.
So,
I think.
This is in 2006.
Yeah.
And I didn't know anything. I didn't know the term purity culture. I was in the smack dab in the middle of it.
Well, we
and
didn't
just
know
perpetuating
it,
either. It. Right.
Yeah, till we left. Like,
so basically it was me knowing that I loved to write, and what could I possibly write about? Oh, I got married a couple of years ago. I can write about my marriage. And then I wrote about sex, and then I wrote about parenting. And then I would go speak to groups of women about this. So I am speaking to Christian groups of women about sex and how you should have sex with your husband, blah, blah, blah. It's actually a funny book. Like, I stand by the writing in the book. I think my writing is better now, but I'll look back at some of that and be like, oh, that is good. And I'm funny. And it's so toxic. I've led some poetry workshops over the past year where we take old writing and make like blackout poetry, erasure poetry, collage poetry.
You use your books for that, don't you?
I do. I have 40 copies of this because it went out of print a few years ago. And,
oh, thank God.
And I got like 2,000 copies of it. So I'm distributing it to all these people by the box. Someone emailed me or messaged me like 2 years ago and said, I have 40 copies of this book. I'm sure you don't want it to go to the thrift store, right? And I was like, no, burn please. It. And then I decided, no, send it to me. I will make crafts out of this.
We will make art yes, from the exactly. pain.
I really am. I'm really doing that.
Now I know what to do with all of my old Christian books. I was at my mom's house recently, and we were talking about how toxic preparing to be your helpmeet is, and or created to be your helpmeet. And my mom has all these books, and she's like, I don't even believe in this stuff anymore, but I don't know what to do because we can't donate it because I don't want to indoctrinate other people because we don't believe in this stuff anymore and it's not good content. And I was like, I don't know, mom, maybe they're just safer on your shelf, you know? Then we're going to make some art.
Okay. First of all, I am super jealous of you with your parents deconstructing and like being on the same wavelength as you, because I can promise you that my mom still has these books on her shelf. And I got rid of all mine years ago. Like slowly, I was deconstructing that kind of stuff a long time ago. Since I've been back in the States for the last 3 years, I have built up my library, and you can see behind me like all these books. And I go to Goodwill a lot. We have really good Goodwills here in South Carolina. I do not know. I don't understand it at all. Like, but there are also a lot of these toxic books that I grew up with, and I will buy them because I'm working on, like you said, this art projects, different things. And I have three shelves over here, and I have a letter board that says The Bad Place. And it's like all of those books that I'm collecting. Because I want to look, I don't know if I'll ever go through them or what I'll do, but I can see help me from here. But just all of the books that I used to read or that my mom read or that I used to cite in From Blushing Bride to Wedded Wife, just a bunch of crap. and then my books are too. I mean, I just regurgitated it. I was like in, and then I put my own little cute spin on it, but it was still the same stuff.
We just had the writer Tia Levings on a couple weeks ago when we recorded with her. And when she does all these like TikToks, and she'll record, and she talks about white supremacy and Christian nationalism and how they like groom young women to act a certain way and behave a certain way so they can get the specific outcome out of them. And it's so funny, as she's recording these TikToks, you see all of these like titles in the back: created to be his helpmeet, preparing to be his helpmeet, sensational womanhood, like all of these different books. And she has them as reference points because she's writing this book. And so she goes back and she basically just tears apart the theology. And she uses these books also as reference points for her videos. And so she is using them, but in a good way, in a way to like help re-educate the people and help people understand why this is toxic content. So I commend you for doing the Lord's work by buying all of these toxic books out of Goodwill and putting them on your shelf so no one else can get indoctrinated.
Yeah, I want to do that, something similar to that. And I don't know if you know who Kristen Cobez Dumais is, but she wrote a book called Jesus and John Wayne, and she goes through and talks about the toxic masculinity and the culture and Christian nationalism and all that. And I connected with her online, and she's now writing a book called Live, Laugh, Love. And it's about white Christian women and that toxic culture. And so she was doing research, and I'm in this Facebook group. She bought copies of all of my old books.
She's going to use your books to talk about why white Christian women are toxic.
Exactly. So hopefully a quote from one of my old books will make it in there.
This is your karma. You're paying some penance. It's like, yeah, I'm going to be embarrassed a lot. You know, I did this embarrassing thing when I was younger, and now you all know about it. And yeah, I'm making up for it by writing some badass poetry books.
Yeah. That's exactly. Okay. So speaking of that, I think the original question was, how did I start writing this poetry? Was it my husband leaving, whatever? So I wrote those in 2006, 7, 8, and 9. And then from there, from 2010-ish to 2018, I just self-published a bunch of eBooks. We moved out of the country. Some of my books went out of print. It's a big, sad story of I wasn't on the internet at the right time. I didn't know about promoting books. Like, my books came out before I was on Facebook or any of that. So all of that kind of fizzled and died. So I just did this ebook thing. Well, then I was just naturally writing about my faith deconstruction over a period of about 5 years, but everything kept changing and I would get so bored by what I was writing. And when we got back in 2020, right before he left, I got this idea of, what if I just took this and turned it into poetry? All the stuff that's boring me, all of that, I'll just say less. I'll just carve that stuff away. And what's left will be, I won't tell the whole story. I'll let other people, like the people who are reading it, fill things in. Because that was kind of the thing. How do you tell this whole story? How do you tell a 10-year story? And then he left and I was kind of frantically trying to figure out how to support myself and my kids. I was making $250 a week at the time when he left, which was not enough money. And I self-published Unbelieve in September of 2021 as poetry. And then after that, so in 2022, in the fall, I connected with a guy named David Morris, who used to be the vice president of Zondervan, which is one of the biggest Christian publishers. He left Evangelical Christianity and he started his own imprint called Lake Drive Books in early 2022. He found me through someone else. And it was a really cool story, but he said, I would love to publish your next book. I had it all ready to go. I was going to self-publish Jaded. And he said, I would love to publish it through Lake Drive. So we did that. And now we're currently getting ready to re-release Unbelieve through Lake Drive Books as well. But once I got into that poetry thing, I used to write poems when I was a kid. And then I didn't write poems for a really, really long time. And people ask me, will I be able to understand your poetry? I don't get poetry. I don't like it. And
100%, yeah. They'll understand it. Yeah. It's good. Yeah. It's real good.
Yeah. So I try to explain, it's not conventional poetry, the kind of poetry where it's really abstract and you have to pretend you know what's going on. Some of it reads like Facebook posts or tweets. Some of it could have been prose. I just switched up the order a little bit and I like it. I like how it's going. I like writing this way. It kind of takes the pressure off of trying to say it all. And people's attention spans are really short these days. You got to fight to get people to read what you've written. And a big long book can be intimidating. I read 250 books a year, but that's not normal. Like most people do not do that.
That is a shit ton of books.
Yeah. So they're mostly books by Black authors, Indigenous authors, other authors of color. I have a Bookstagram account called White Girl Learning, and I read and review books there. But as for my own stuff, will I always write poetry and only poetry? Maybe not. But for now, I really like how it's going, how it's been received. It's been a little tricky trying to convince people about it, but hopefully it will catch on more once more people like at the beginning of this podcast, when you're like, hey, this is great. You should read this. It's cool. And that's what, that's my hope because once people read it, the response is awesome.
And you can get people to read it in like strides too. You don't have to sit down and like just read it in chronological order either. That's what's kind of nice about poetry, is you can skip around or, you know, let something marinate with you. I mean, even if you just read like a couple pages, like that can just be enough, because there might just be a lot for you to chew on for a minute. And like, that's kind of what's great about poetry, is like, it's just structured in a way that it's almost like looking at pieces of art. And then you can sit with it, and then you can, you know, think about it and have all these revelations about it. So I don't know. I'm a big poetry fan though.
Should we have a poetry slam on today's podcast? Because I wrote a poem this morning. And also, we also want to hear a couple of your poems if you're open to sharing on the show. But like, I mean, I'm a huge fan of poetry. I have so many poetry books in my home. When I started reading your book, I was like, I'm buying a copy of this for all of my siblings. They're all getting a copy. Yay. Because I think sometimes my parents are like, you need to read Jesus and John Wayne. I'm like, I want to, but that's a really big book. It's heavy. There's a lot of stuff to deconstruct. You know, there's so many really good books that are necessary to read. But sometimes when you're in this space of being a busy working adult, and it can be really emotionally taxing to like sit in that shadow work for such
sometimes
a long time.
Sometimes you don't want to read like self-help books. I know they're not self-help, but you don't want to read those. Sometimes you just want to read fiction and not think about your life.
Or just, you know, if you want to think about your life, you want to do it in like smaller, more condensed forms. So I think poetry is the best way to convey what you're processing and healing from and healing through. And so I really loved the format of the book. I loved the flow of it. The content was incredible. It was easy to read. It was quick. I was like excited to move to the next thing. And yeah, it just really, really grabbed my attention. I think poetry is a really powerful tool to convey not only story, but deep emotion in a really simple way. And it's a great way to like relate and connect with other human beings who are going through the same thing. So I found it fantastic. And I think in today's age, like you said, people's attention spans are so short. Like I was reading this book and I'm like, I could give this to my older sister who has three children and is in constant overwhelm. And I can give this to her and she's going to be so grateful because she is also deconstructing. And then she can, you know, use this as like a balm to her deconstructing journey, you know, or something to like maybe inspire some thought throughout her day. But it's not a big chunky book, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have any, maybe like some favorites or any ones that you would feel compelled to read on the podcast?
Oh gosh, that's a good question.
If not, we do.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to pick one and then I'll read it, or do you want to read it, or it's up to you?
We want you to read it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we'll pick one if you don't have one specific.
Yeah, go for it.
Rachel, did you have one picked out?
Yeah, but I need to pull it up because I forgot to
mark
the title. I grabbed it, but I forgot to grab the title.
Well, while Rachel is doing that, I would love to hear a little bit more about what inspired your Bookstagram account, White Girl Learning, kind of what got you started on that journey, and just kind of share, like, I don't know, like what have you learned from reading from like people of color, you know, hearing their voices, hearing their stories, reading their stories. What has that been like as someone who is deconstructing their white evangelical background?
It has been amazing. It really has changed my whole life. I learned how to read when I was 4. So I'm 47. So it's been a long time that I've been reading, and I've been reading a ton, like nonstop. I'd always have all these books going at one time when I was a kid. I'd spend so much time in my room reading. And I mentioned the church that we helped plant with our Black pastor friend. And it was around that time, like when Trayvon Martin was killed, and I was talking to my friends, and I just started realizing that all of these books that I'm reading, not only were they mostly all Christian books, but they were all written by white people and some white women, a lot of white men. And I just read a couple books by some Black authors and I was like, oh wow, this is like a new world for me. And so then I started reading some more, and then I didn't know, I'd never heard of Bookstagram until a friend of mine, we became friends on Instagram. I went to her page and all of her photos were of books. And mine are like just my kids. I'm like, what is she doing? There's books. She has things set around these books. And then she told me about Bookstagram. Anyway, so we're in Cambodia and it was December 1st, 2017 is my first post. And it was just me peeking around a stack of books by Black authors that I had collected and I had read. And then I started posting, I think Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Tuesday, Thursday. But then I started reading so many so fast that I started posting more often. And after a year or so, I think I started posting every day. So I review a book every single day. I don't read a book a day. Sundays, I have a Sunday six stack. So it's like 6 books that are a common theme, or the spines make a poem, or they're the same color, or they're by the same author. my niece, who's 13, she reads middle grade and young adult books for me on Mondays and sometimes Fridays. My other nieces read picture books and I post those. And then I read a lot of nonfiction. There's just so much that I want to learn, but I have that bad place bookshelf with all the toxic Christianity purity culture books. And I also have another bookcase that's like whitewashed history, another project that I'm really passionate about. And that goes to get right together hand in hand with toxic Christianity. When you learn about the truth of what our country was really founded on and built on, genocide of indigenous peoples and then enslavement of Africans and all the way through, and how these were quote unquote godly men who were doing this, and people who were lynching Black people after church. And now we're seeing it. I mean, it's just all out there right in front of us. And we're seeing in Florida and everywhere else where they're banning books that talk about racism or banning books that talk about Martin Luther King Jr. And it's like, they're trying to erase even more of the history, the truth of history, because they want this picture of this noble country that fought for freedom and the Constitution and the Second Amendment and all of this. And it's all just really tied in together with white supremacy and gun culture and everything else. So that was just this giant wake up call for me. And I'm learning more and more every day. And one challenge for me is trying to remember when I didn't know any of this, and realizing that that's where a lot of people are, and trying to be gentle with them, but also stress the urgency that it took me a long time to wake up. We don't have that kind of time anymore. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr. sat in the Birmingham jail like 65 years ago or whatever and said, we don't have any more time. Like, we got to go faster. And I have a poem about that in Jaded. What have we done since then? Like, we haven't gone faster. We've even gone backward. But I have met so many people. I made so many friends and authors and other people who are reading. I have this event coming up on May 30th. My friend Trey Ferguson is actually a Black pastor, and we have connected over our writing and the books that we read. And here I am, an agnostic, a white woman. He's a Black pastor. And we're reading a lot of the same books because we both, what he calls a commitment to wholeness, we have a commitment to each other's wholeness, to people's wholeness. And I used to just be friends with people who believe the exact same things that I believed. Now I am friends with people who value the same thing I do, who value equality for everybody, who value truth, like learning the truth of history, who value everybody being able to be who they are and be celebrated for that. And so I do have a lot of friends who are Christians, but I'm realizing, like Trey and my friend Naya and some other friends, that have their idea of God is not the same as what my idea of God was. When I say that I'm like quitting God, throwing God away, it's because I had such a toxic view of God. I don't know who God is or what God is or all of that. But if the God you're talking about is love, like if that's the kind of God you're talking about, then yeah, I can get behind that. I'll just call it love. You call it God. But we both just really, really are passionate about people being free and not being oppressed and not being marginalized and not being abused and not having their rights taken away just because they don't fit the mold of these Christians that are trying to take over the country. And I was part of that. Like I would read books growing up. I read this book, Jerry Falwell. Like I shook his hand when I was a kid. My aunt and uncle went to his church. And I read a book about this girl who got pregnant when she was a teenager, and she went to his home for teen moms. And so I'm like cheering this on and anti-abortion this and that. And it's so wild now to be like completely on the other side and seeing those people, like my family, as the enemy, as the people that are trying to take rights away. yeah, it's rough. But I'm glad I woke up, and I'm just trying to help other people also wake up. And some days I feel really helpful, and other days I I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Feels like you're talking to a brick wall some days.
Yeah.
I went to Sunday school every Sunday, and now I can't hear a loud horn without having an anxiety attack.
Hi, I'm recently deceased but never forgotten Christian music sex symbol Carmen. I'm calling collect from the big house, meaning heaven, not jail, to tell you how to get answers for your religious traumas.
I started the excommunication station, and now I realize my empathy felt weird when I was a kid, and how the Council for National Policy, a shadowy Christian organization, controls just about fucking everything in America.
So if you've been looking for answers, or if you've ever been on the outside wondering, hey, what's really going on in the church? These gobble ghouls have the info you need. So look up the excommunication station wherever you get your podcasts, and all their socials under XCOMPOD. Peace be with you.
I think you're doing something really big with your Instagram account, with your Bookstagram. I just followed it, by the way. You have over 13,000 followers on there, which is incredible. And I think it's such a cool thing to like uplift voices that aren't necessarily pushed in the mainstream. A lot of these books you're not going to be able to find on the library apps. You know, they might not be on Audible. And so having a place where you can find these books where they're featured front and center, I'm excited about this because I started reading again last year and have just, I read probably over 20 books last year, which was huge for me. A lot of them were like, you know, healing and self-help books. And then I started getting into fantasy again, but not, I think only two authors were Black authors. And one of them was for the podcast. Really realizing like there's a huge gap in my education. Around, you know, hearing voices of people who are not like me and learning from them. And so I'm going to be on your Bookstagram pulling up books that I think are interesting.
Yay!
And I'm
going
to be adding to my to be read list. I'm very excited about that. So thank you for that work, because you're helping people like me recognize like, oh my gosh, my, even my reading list is totally whitewashed. I need to expand that more. And it's really important to educate oneself and hear from other people that are not like us. But Rachel, did you find the poem?
Yeah, I have a few.
I have one.
You don't. Okay. Yeah, we don't have to read them all. I mean, they're all pretty short, but I read that face one and I was like, yeah, which kind of ties into what we were just talking about with white evangelical Christianity. So I don't know if you want, if you have can pull that up, Marla. I mean, we'd love to hear it from you.
Or which one is that?
If you'd rather not, that face one.
Oh, do you? I'm sorry.
Page
do you
number
have
is it?
Page numbers? Yeah, because I don't know where any of my poems are, and I.
Okay, I did not grab the page numbers, so we're back to where we started.
Let me see if I can.
Well, here's one. Actually, let's start with this one. Page 20. I used to think. I loved this one. I feel like this really encompassed, I mean, like a lot of the things Rachel and I talk about on this show.
Okay. I used to think gay people can't take the rainbow and Buddhists can't take white elephants. Those are gods. Well, how about evangelical Christians can't take God? God is everyone's. And what kind of God kills almost every creature on the planet, then casually says, this was just a one and done, okay? Seriously, I promise. See, here's a rainbow.
Yeah.
When it was, see, here's a rainbow, I was like, yo. This is one of the ones I read out loud to my dog today.
Oh, that's fun.
So excellent.
Okay, so mine is 53, that face one.
53. That face when you come to the conclusion that not only is there no hell, but white evangelical Christianity is the hell.
Hell was a big one for me to deconstruct from. It was, I had so much anxiety wrapped in it. So my my leaving Christianity existential crisis was rough as far as death and hell. So I've come a long way since then, but I started comparing hell to like what's actually just happening now and here on earth, and the hell that I was, my own personal hell that I was in when in Christianity. And so reading that, I was like, yeah, there's no afterlife of hell. Like, this is the hell. Being in this white evangelical Christianity is the hell.
Yeah, I have in Unbelieve, I have a poem called Love Wins, and it's about the Rob Bell book. I don't know if you've read Rob Bell's book
that
called Love Wins.
That was my first deconstruction book ever. It was so good.
I read that in 2017 when we lived in Cambodia, and I was on the verge of like giving up hell, and then I read that and I was like, yep, that's it. It's over. And then I also have in Unbelieve, a haiku for Rob Bell 7 years later. I dug your book out of the trash and hungrily devoured it whole. The poem before that, I talk about how I bought the book, I think in 2010, whenever it came out, I bought it. I tried to read it. It scared the hell out of me. Threw it in the trash. Wow. Like, I literally threw it in the trash because I was like, I can't do this. It was so much cognitive dissonance, and I couldn't handle it. And then I kind of forgot about it. And then I read it. And then when I read it again, the whole thing, I just was like, this, I mean, it made me kind of, kind of mad at myself that I did not give it another try, or at least put it on my bookshelf and try again a year or two later or whatever. But,
Your nervous system wasn't ready to handle the face plant that you were going to make after reading that book. I think that our bodies know when it's safe to explore something new. And like we talk about this a lot on the show, is something that evangelicalism does is it shuts down like that inner voice, that inner intuition, and feeling safe in your own body. You can only be safe in Jesus. You can only be saved under Jesus. So, you know, you picking up Rob Bell's book, obviously there was something in you that was saying, I need this. But then there was that other part of you that was saying, this is going to contradict everything I have been taught is true and real.
Yeah.
And your nervous system said, fight or flight, fuck that.
Except I didn't say fuck back then because I didn't cuss all the way up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's, and I've had so many Christians say to me, then if there's no hell, then what's the point? Like, what's the point of Jesus dying? What's the point of this one? And again, I have a whole, like, I have 12 poems maybe about hell and unbelief. And I'm like, let's listen to ourselves. Listen to ourselves say, if most of the world is not going to burn in eternal torture and torment, then what's the point of my faith? That's what we're saying. And if people going to hell brings you comfort, how is that a God that you want to worship? How is that a religion that you want to hold on to? And I'm always telling people
to be moral. What kind of person are you in the first place?
Yeah, like you can't, I don't need a hell gun held to my head to be good. That's what I've also said, because they're like, why, if there's no hell, then what's to keep you from doing this or doing that or doing that? I'm like, you know what? I'm just not going to do that. Like, I'm not going to kill someone. Yeah. I'm not going to make those choices, but I'm not here to take people's comforting beliefs away from them. If you want to believe in heaven, this is what I'm always telling people. I want there to be a heaven. I want there to be a place where I see my kids again or my friends again if one of us dies. I want that so badly. That's not harming anybody. A belief in hell, where if you're gay, you're going to hell. If you're Muslim, you're going to hell. If you don't believe the things that I believe, you're going to hell. That's a harmful belief. Why do we need to believe in it? We don't. And if you believe in heaven and you don't believe in heaven and I believe this and I believe that, we can all believe different things and it's fine. And we're not harming each other by those beliefs. And we can't know anyway. Like, we think we can know, but we can't. So everything we're imagining about an afterlife is completely in our imaginations anyway.
It's all in your head. Yeah. And like the other thing I want to pose to Christians is like, are you afraid of going to the Muslim hell? Are you afraid of going to other religious hells?
Yeah.
No. So why should they be afraid? And right. Why should I be afraid of going to your hell? Like what makes your hell superior? You know?
Yeah.
Things to ask them. I'm sure they'll have some weird circled answer, but yeah. Like, it's just like, if you're not afraid to go to that hell, then, and they're not afraid to go to your hell, then the logic is kind of, you know, you're breaking.
Well, you know, up. They've never considered that ever once, like that. No. Are someone
there other
else.
Hells?
Yeah. I remember the first time I heard the term Christian supremacy, and I was so offended by it because I was like, well, of course we shouldn't have white supremacy because white people aren't superior. But Christian supremacy, wait, Christians are superior. Like, we have the right answer. So of course.
We're always right. We're the entitled ones.
Yeah. Anyway.
The other one I really liked was Hand of God, because I felt like it's on page 67. I felt like this was the message that was like definitely given to me as the child. My mom would pray for everything, no matter how big or small, you know, tornado would come, like, oh, you know, Lord, protect our house, whatever, whatever. Oh, the tornado turned at the last minute and it missed our house and got another house. We don't care about that house, right? Because it's just about our house. So this whole thing of like, well, God protected us and yet people still died was always kind of weird to me, but that was definitely the message that I grew up thinking. And it kind of debunks the whole loving, gracious God.
Yeah. You want me to read that one?
Yes.
Hand of God, praise you, gracious God, for protecting me and my family by moving that hurricane out of the path of my home, the quiet part, and into someone else's.
Yep.
Let's let that marinate for a moment. Yeah. I always used to think, back when I was a good Christian girl, like, you know, why do bad things happen to God-fearing people if God is supposed to protect us for following his will? And then, you know, when bad things would maneuver out of the way of the good Christian people, it was that, you know, that's God's hand, you know, he took care of us. You know, when bad things would happen to Christian people, it's, well, there must be a reason, you know, there's a reason for every season, you know, there's a lesson to be learned here. God is going, you know, he's going to teach them something. There's going to be transformation here, you know, and always a way to like spin it. And it's like, well, maybe just random shit happens and we get caught in the middle of it. And maybe it's just an experience of being human. And doesn't have a whole lot to do with this all-seeing, all-powerful God, you know?
And he's obviously not very all-seeing or all-powerful if he can't stop a hurricane from hitting anyone's house.
Right. And it, so, yeah. I remember having this moment, like, I was a missionary kid myself, and we were homeschooled, and we did, like, the Sunlight curriculum, and they had this whole, like, missionary part of the curriculum where we would learn about missions, and they're very obsessed with the 1040 window, which is like the unreached people groups in the world. And I remember watching this video about the 1040 window and how these are the unreached people groups of the world, and we're going to go in and, you know, we're going to save these people, but this is also areas where Christianity is illegal, and so you have to go undercover, and it's this big
I'll
thing,
die
you
for
know.
The 1040
yeah,
groups.
It was this whole, like, my mission board was like so obsessed with the 1040 window, and I remember being like, there are entire populations of people who have never heard the word of God. Does that mean they're just like burning in hell because they never even heard the word of God? And I remember posing this question to my mom, and I was like,
I totally did that too.
10 or 11, very young. And I was like, so you mean to tell me that like young babies who die, you know, before accepting Jesus into their heart, like they're going to hell? And you mean to tell me that these entire groups of people who have no idea what Christianity even is are going to hell because they didn't have a missionary come and save them? Like, I was very concerned about that. I was like, that just, it just doesn't make any sense to me that if God is a loving God, that would happen. And you know, it's so funny. My very smart intellectual parents at that time had zero answer for me. And
yeah,
you know, now their concept of God and Jesus is in faith is very different, and having that same conversation, you know, with my father now is very funny, because he's just like, you know, it's like, it isn't so much about, like, you know, asking Jesus into your heart and being saved and knowing the one and true way. It's about social change and social justice and taking care of the least of these. You know, that's how we are Christ-like, you know?
That's what he says. I firmly believe, like, her parents will end up walking away at some point.
Oh, I'm ready for it. I'm like so excited. They're well on their way. They're like right on the edge. My dad he's a basically a priest now. Like, he's with the Catholic Church now. He's like so left evangelicalism. But it's so funny, because like when I was younger, they were like, yeah, you know, that's why we have to be missionaries, because all these people are going to die and go to hell.
It's,
you know,
our job,
yeah,
to tell everyone, mm-hmm, right, about
20 years
Jesus.
Later, they're like, oh yeah, no, like, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
That's good.
But yeah, that's I remember that as a kid, and I remember being very uncomfortable with that concept and just being like, I don't know if I can buy into this. This just feels a little far-fetched.
Yeah. And then they created the age of accountability to kind of like have us stop thinking that children were going to hell. Mm-hmm. I remember that whole thing, which I don't even know. I know the age of accountability is kind of debunked.
Is the age of accountability? Is it like 14? It's like the age of consent.
I thought it
like
was 12.
18.
I don't
know. 12, like, I think. Yeah.
Like, if you can't consent to having sex, or like you can't, you know, like, maybe you should.
How about when your brain is developed?
Right. Like 28.
25.
25. Yeah.
28.
25.
The frontal lobe.
Let's just keep moving it up. There is no age of accountability.
Your frontal lobe doesn't even fully form if you're a man until you're like between the ages of 28 and 35.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's even then?
So I turned 28 in November, and it was like a light bulb went off, and I think my frontal lobe fully formed. Like, it was like, oh.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I like have, I'm thinking through my decisions.
I'm not impulsive anymore.
I'm not doing dumb shit.
I have a sense of, I could die if I do this.
Yeah. I'm taking my time with things.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I got saved when I was 3.
We don't have that burden anymore.
Oh, you got saved when you were 3. I was like, I remember getting baptized when I was like 5, because my brother got baptized, and I was like, yo, I want a gold cross necklace, and I want to get baptized in front of a bunch of people.
I want to be dipped in water, yo.
Yeah. And then I was like 14. I got saved at Jesus camp for real. And then I got baptized again. So I've been baptized twice.
I got saved so many times.
How many times did you do an altar call?
Probably at least 5.
You're just like,
just because,
really,
you know, you're not sure.
Gotta make sure.
You're not
to make sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
You're never sure.
Like, you
and
could.
And the front of hell is strong, baby.
Man.
It's strong. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to go there.
Well, we have covered so much ground today. And
yeah, keep up, y'all. No, I'm just kidding.
We want to have you back, Marla, because like I feel like we just have so much more to talk about. But unfortunately, we do need to wrap up. So can you please tell our listeners how they can find you, how they can buy your book, where to follow you on the socials, all of the info. And we will also provide this in the show notes. So, yeah.
I spend most of my time online on Instagram, and it was Twitter. I keep saying I'm going to get off Twitter. I just saw that Tucker Carlson is now going to be on Twitter with Elon Musk.
You should stay on Twitter.
That's amazing. But,
so I'm Marla Taviano at on Instagram and on Twitter. And then The White Girl Learning is my other Instagram, where it's exclusively books that I read and review by BIPOC authors. And I do have a website, marlataviano.com. It needs some work. I haven't done a lot with that there. I have a Substack where I write a new poem, sometimes an old poem that I give some backstory on, or a new poem every Thursday. It's marlataviano.substack.com. And yeah, I think that's all the places that I am. You can buy the book from lakedrivebooks.com or Amazon. Jaded is available anywhere you buy books online. Unbelieve is only available through Amazon right now, but this summer it will be re-released through Lake Drive. So it'll be available everywhere too. And then my third book will either be out at the end of this year or the beginning of 2024. that's going to be that, you know, happy book about possibilities and stuff.
We'll see. That you can- We'll see. We're going to have you on. We're going to have you on for another like interview about that book, and I'll be like, so Marley, you said that it was going to be hopeful and full of possibilities. And I'm depressed.
I'll try. I won't promise. No, but I'm going to give it a try.
Hey,
I
kind of, you know what? I think the next one.
We have to be hopeful while we have the anger and all of that stuff. It's kind of a tension that I'm holding on to. But I do have hope. If you don't have hope, I don't know how to go forward. I don't know how to wake up each day and keep going if I don't have some hope, even if I invented it, like if it's imaginary, but just believing. I've seen a lot of good things happen. I've seen people wake up who I never thought would. And I have white friends in their 70s who have also deconstructed that give me hope. So there's hope. It's just, there's a lot of other shit.
Listen, if my church planting career missionary parents can read deconstruction books about white supremacy and about white evangelicalism, I feel like there's hope for other people, because I will be honest. I have spoken to some of like my parents, like family members, like their sisters and brothers about it. And like, I'm like, so I have this podcast and I'm deconstructing, and they're like, Molly, when your parents went on the mission field, I was so terrified for you kids because it was so culty and, you know, you were so isolated. And like, they've said these things to me and I'm like, I had no idea my aunt felt this way, you know? And she's like, I am just so grateful to have my sister back, you know?
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, wow. You know, so I think there is hope, you know, and, and I think if we just need to keep educating ourselves and continuing to be a light in the world,
but in the opposite way,
not to evangelize the evangelicals, but to
right.
be, you know, just to lead by example, and they're going to see like, wow, like Marla is so much more like loving and kind and compassionate and open-minded, and she's not shunning me for having different beliefs than her. Maybe I shouldn't shun other people who have different beliefs than me. You know, what is it about my faith that makes me shun other people? You know, I think that that's, as us who are deconstructing, so many times the question that is posed to us is, how do I help my friend who is in this cult get out of the cult? And it's like, well, you just need to keep living by example, because you can't pull people out unless they want to come out.
Right. Very true.
But,
yep.
Well, it's all been fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
thank you for coming on and reaching out, Marla. And I'm excited to read the rest of your poems. I am ordering through them all.
All your books. For all
no,
my
no, no, not all, all of them. Not all the books.
I'm gonna order, all of them. I'm going to order the Krishna books too.
Oh,
I'm just kidding. I'm not going to. I'm glad they're out of
print. Yeah, don't do that. But yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and your books and and your Instagram pages. We're excited to continue to follow you and see what you do. And everyone go follow Marla because she's doing cool things.
She's doing the coolest
things. Thank you.
Things.
She's doing the Lord's work.
That's right.
Period.
Amen. Amen.
Period. Okay. Right. Have a good night, y'all.
Bye. Looking for a safe place to deconstruct? If so, I have the place for you. We have a Facebook support group, and if you're not in it, you should absolutely be in it, because there's a lot of amazing conversations happening in this group. So, if you are wanting to be in a community with others who are in the same deconstruction process, find us on Facebook, Cheers to Leaving Support Group. You can also click the link in our show notes and it will take you to that page. You can request to join, answer the questions, and become part of the conversation. We're looking forward to seeing you there.
Thanks for listening to Cheers to Leaving. We are seriously so glad you're here. Follow us on Instagram at Cheers to Leaving. Our sound and editing is by Cameron Smith. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe and share with your friends and others who may be deconstructing. You can also email us at cheerstoleaving@gmail.com with your stories about leaving evangelicalism. See you in 2 weeks.